At this point, we'll transition into our first speaker here. That's Dr. Ed Ussett. He's a grain marketing specialist for the University of Minnesota. He also works closely with the Center for Farm Financial Management, which is located there also. And he has teaches futures and options marketing at the university. He has some award-winning Winning the Game and Tool Time, a series of workshops that is used pretty much nationwide in terms of teaching marketing skills, the interaction, the mechanics, and allowing some hands-on practice for marketing commodities in the U.S. And Ed has also published a book, his first book, Grain Marketing is Simple, It's Just Not Easy. How true that is. And with that, Ed, I think you're set up and ready to go here. We'll turn it over to you, and you can take it away.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, or good afternoon to those of you in the Eastern time zone. But good morning for the most of us. My name is Ed Ussett. I'm a grain marketing specialist with the Center for Farm Financial Management at the University of Minnesota. One modest correction, I've been referred to as Dr. Ed Ussett, and I do not have a PhD degree. I'm not a doctor. I tell people I play one as I travel around, but I'm not really a doctor. I have a master's degree and quite pleased with that. My job this morning is to talk about something I don't normally talk about, and that is outlook, corn and soybean outlook. A brief look at some numbers at play, and what we're looking at, and I may even venture into territory no one should go, and that is with a bold price projection here as we look ahead this spring. I'm going to look first at corn. I'm going to show you a balance sheet, and it's maybe a dull format, but it gives me a chance to focus on some key numbers in the balance sheet supply and demand. So we'll get started, and what I'm showing here is the balance sheet for corn, highlighted in the middle in green, is the balance sheet for the current crop year. The crop year in corn, of course, is September 1 through August 31. And we're a little over the halfway point in that crop year, just at the halfway point. And progressing through, and I'm going to talk about some of the numbers you see there, on the far right of this balance sheet is the preliminary projections put out by the USDA in their 2012 Ag Outlook Forum that took place in late February. They do this every year. Or they have been doing it for about a decade. They put out, if you will, the USDA does, their peek into the year ahead. Now, this is 2012-2013. Again, this is applies to the year starting September 1, 2012, and through next year. It's preliminary. I don't think they'll call it official. Their first official look at 2012-13 will come with the May WASDE report. But I want to look at some of these numbers. First, thinking about the current year we're in, I'm crossing out the upper half, the supply side. That's kind of known. I don't think we have many secrets there left. We've made our good estimates, projections on planted acres and harvested acres and yields and so on. We know what we've produced. What's left is some question about the demand side, and I'll just point at some interesting numbers. One I'll point at is the feed and residual numbers for the current crop year, and compare them, if you will, to corn for ethanol. I just want to make a point here. We're using today more corn in the production of ethanol than we are feeding to cows and pigs and chickens. And that's a remarkable thing. Now, this is not the first year. I believe last year was the first year that happened. but it points to a change in leadership in the corn market. And I think everyone listening understands this, and yet I don't know if we can overemphasize it enough. The corn market is being led by different forces today than it was just 10 years ago, 20 years ago. If you ask me to project the price of corn, to give you thoughts on the price of corn going out 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, today, if you ask me that today, I'm going to ask you, well, what do you think the price of oil will do? Because when we start turning corn into ethanol, or when we're doing it to the degree we are, that's the main driver here. I'm not diminishing the feed side. It's almost an equal partner. But this energy side is a big, big player. And so you ask me, where's corn going? I'll ask you, where's oil going? This is a chart just showing the remarkable growth in corn used in ethanol production over the last three decades. And what is noteworthy here is sort of that hockey stick shape to this bar chart, and yet it is leveling off in the last couple of years. I can't talk about the current year, can't talk about the corn market without at least mentioning ethanol. Now, I'm going to point you to a number at the bottom of the supply and demand here, and that's ending stocks. Ending stocks of corn are projected at about 800 million bushels this year. That sure sounds like a lot if you think of landing in your living room or something like that, but that's not where it is. And given our base of consumption, that's a very narrow level of ending stocks, and I'll show you how narrow that ending stocks level is. This is a simple chart of the last six decades of U.S. ending stocks to use. I'm measuring ending stocks. This is stocks of corn in the U.S. as of August 31st, the end of the crop year. And it is shown in weeks of carryover. It's not shown chronologically. It's shown from, if you will, highest to lowest. And you can see that we've had years, many years ago, where we would have a half a year's worth of supply, 25 to 30 weeks worth of supply on hand as the new crop was beginning to be harvested. Well, we don't live in those times anymore. You can see us way on the far right. The red line indicates where we are this year. We've got something on the order of 3 to 3.5 weeks of corn usage on hand when the crop year ends. That's the projection. That's very tight. I used to be a buyer for a flour mill, and I'm just putting myself today in the shoes of someone feeding cattle, someone buying corn for an ethanol plant. That's a very skinny, skinny margin. It's a tight carryout, can't be overemphasized. You can't run a business with 2 days worth of corn on hand. You need a couple weeks for most of us. So this is a very, very tight carryout and worthy of note, and probably the biggest single driving force as we look at the current crop year. Now I want to shift gears, though, because we're halfway through the current crop year. We've got a March planting intentions report coming out at the end of this month, and it will point ahead to next year, 2012-13. And I'd like to just peek at a few numbers there, if I may. For example, USDA is indicating planted acres in the year ahead, 94 million acres of corn. That's 2 million acres more than a year ago. I follow the chatter in the industry. I think a lot of people feel, with favorable planting conditions that we have, that that number could in fact be 95 million acres. We're going to find out soon enough. But I'm not uncomfortable with the USDA's look there as they look to the year ahead. But it could be a little bit bigger. We are going to have, it appears to me, as I sit in my swank office in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it's about 60 degrees, we're going to get in the fields early. And the persistent dryness, we're going to get that crop in unless there's a sudden change in weather patterns in the next few weeks. Corn for ethanol, decreasing a bit in the year ahead. Noteworthy, a lot of chatter on ethanol, a lot of chatter that these plants aren't making money, they're going to start paring back, ethanol stocks are large, and yet every week I see the reports come out and they seem to be hanging in there just fine in terms of production. But it is noteworthy, a modest reduction seen in the year ahead. These are the numbers we should be paying attention to. Again, I emphasize this is from the USDA. They are projecting an average corn yield in the U.S. of 164 bushels the acre. And that is, that strikes me as ambitious. And it is based on that high yield that we're going to end up with a big, big production number, almost 2 billion bushels more corn this year than last year. But that 164, it strikes me as large. The bears will point to it, say it's doable. I agree, it's doable. Technology is such, it's doable, but a lot of things got hit right to do that. And I can't help but point you to some discussion going out there. I'm a follower of Dr. Elwin Taylor out of Iowa State University. This was a headline from about a week ago, 10 days ago. Climatologist sees signs of a looming drought, and he points to three things going on. A continuing La Nina, which a La Nina weather event generally spells warmer, drier temperatures in the Corn Belt, at least the northern part of the Corn Belt. So we got that going on. Elwin also notes that South Carolina endured a drought last year. That may seem like an odd thing to refer to. What does it mean that South Carolina, a southeastern state, not even in the Corn Belt, has a drought? Well, Elwin is someone who notes that many of our major droughts start in the southeast and move to the Midwest. And Elwin notes, and I can vouch for this, that a good chunk of the northern tier of Iowa and a good chunk of the southern tier of Minnesota is in the midst of a severe drought. We really lack moisture in some of these areas. So Elwin puts the odds of a drought somewhere at a 50-50 chance. For you bulls out there, I will remind you that 50-50 means that there's a 50% chance of a perfectly normal year going on here, too. But we look at that, and it makes me get a little queasy about the 164 bushel number. And I point you instead now to a balance sheet where I plugged in a different yield number, a different trend line yield. This, by the way, is inside baseball talk for analysts, but what is a trend line yield? USDA says 164. I pulled this 157 from our friends and colleagues at the University of Illinois. Doctors Scott Irwin and Daryl Good do a great job out there, and they would argue that trend line yields are not that high. They're closer to 157 bushels of the acre. And if you flow that through, we don't end up with doubling our ending stocks at the year, at the end of the year. We end up with a modest 200 million bushel increase in ending stocks. This is a normal year. This is not butt-kicking drought type numbers, nor is it the ambitious 164 average yield indicated by the USDA. I think this is a little more of a realistic look at the year ahead. But back to our current situation, because I think this is what speaks to what I want to talk about prices the rest of the year. It's a very tight carryout, and I've got a table here with probably too much information, but I want you to know that the current year we're in, I think the I think what's ruling this year right now, we look at the tight carryout. We also look at an inverse from old crop to new crop. That is, July corn futures, if you look at them, are trading at a significant premium, a 80 to 90 cent premium, to the new crop December contract. So we've got a tight carryout, and we've got an inverse. And you know what? We've got other years like that going back to 1990. And in fact, I found five other similar years, and they're listed there. 93, 94, 95, 96, 96, 97, 2003 and 4, 2010, 11, last year. They all have in common a tight carryout. They all have in common an inverse in the July-December old crop, new crop spread. And on the right, I looked for where did prices go in the spring. And all of the years, except for the first year in question, 93-94, there we saw a peak in January, an early peak in cash prices, and a slow fading off of prices into the spring with another rally in June. But every other year is noted by prices peaking out later in the spring, even into early summer. And that's the territory we're in. And so my guesstimate, if you will, on corn is that I expect corn prices and basis both to hold firm until this market is convinced of better 2012 crop prospects. And, you know, it's mid-January. We haven't planted a thing yet. We got some time to go before we are convinced of better crop prospects. I'm going to shift gears here to soybeans and take much less time on soybeans. I think that corn is king and the main focus. Soybeans, we've got some numbers to look at here too. I'm already looking ahead to next year. A lot of people thinking that we'll get USDA thinking. Same number of acres of soybeans this year as last year. Here again, I could be convinced of a modest increase, and there's chatter of that being a million acres higher. Similar issue with the yields. USDA has a pretty healthy yield forecast in there, which would run contrary to what Elwin Taylor's talking about, or a more modest look by our friends at the University of Illinois, but it's there. We're going to keep an eye on that. Export numbers, that's a big one for next year, but of course, South America has had its problems, and we see prospects for good export numbers in the year ahead. Ending stocks, tightening up quite a bit in the year ahead, according to USDA, and I can't disagree with that. I can't disagree with that. If you look at the ending stocks to use, the same format I used in corn, only I have a different measure of ending stocks to use. I'm using a percentage, not weeks of usage, just to mix it up a little bit. You see that our carryout for next year, I've jumped ahead a year here, modest. And makes the price prospects in soybeans a little more interesting. I find it maybe a little puzzling that at least in their early look, USDA has soybean prices steady to maybe even a little bit lower in the year ahead than the year we're currently looking at, which is puzzling given the tightening of stocks, but it speaks to how much credence they're putting on those corn numbers and a big corn crop moderating all prices. Prices have been showing strength in the current crop year for soybeans. A lot of good things going on. Planted acres are a wild card for next year. We'll get a better handle on that by the end of March. But on corn and soybeans, you know, we've got this macro-micro view. The micro view on corn with the tight carryouts is positive. The macro view, this world view of the economies and where the world economy is going, is sort of the wet rag on this whole thing. Concerning 2012 crop prospects, maybe we have some listeners here from Missouri, but state motto in Missouri is show me. It's the show me state, and I'm in a show me state of mind when it comes to 2012. We're going to have a hard time breaking prices sharply until you show me that, in fact, this crop is developing the way some optimistic people think it will. I think that's about it for my thoughts on corn and
Okay, thank you, Ed. We'll take just a minute here before we get Randy queued up to ask a question. One of the questions come in from the audience. Although not a perfect substitute for corn, how much does the growth in DDG use add to feed supplies, and how does that follow on and impact corn markets?
Well, it's certainly a big player. Some people have more sophisticated ways of adding that into the balance sheet. USDA hasn't done it yet. When I say more corn is going into ethanol than into feed channels, I know a lot of people want to correct me and say, well, wait a second, 25% of the corn that goes into ethanol, in fact, comes back into feed channels as DDGs. It's true, and it's become a major feed source in the market. And I don't have a nice, slick way of putting that into the balance sheet, though.
Okay. One more quick question, and we'll go on to Randy. How are the high corn prices impacting current and future land prices? We've heard some pretty interesting, maybe anecdotal stories about land prices. Are they going to continue to push land prices up, keep land prices up? What's your thoughts?
Good. It's a very simple equation here. Good corn prices, more important than corn prices, good profitability. Right now, just having high corn prices isn't enough to keep the land prices up. It's the there's a great deal of profitability in the last couple of years in corn and soybean production. And, keeping prices high helps that. But, of course, input costs are the other side of the equation. They seem to be catching up some here. So as long as profitability stays high, those land prices are going to stay high.
Okay.